how to get through the ups and downs of life. Next on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolf.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Winston Churchill famously said, if you're going through hell, keep going. Of course, he was speaking metaphorically, but it does beg the question, how do you keep going? Though there's no escape from the literal hell, there's a way to persevere through the great trials of life, as we'll learn on today's Balanced Word. We're glad you're with us. Our teacher, Dave Rolf, pastors at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel, and he's taking us through the Bible in stories. We'll have a look at the story of Joseph today. The way he gets through the ups and downs of his life is very instructive. Let's join Pastor Dave in Genesis chapter 37 as he begins.
The last great character in Genesis is a man named Joseph. His story starts in Genesis chapter 37. So you can turn there and we'll go through it quickly. Joseph is really an interesting character, fascinating. In the book of Genesis, more time is spent on Joseph's life than even Abraham's life. Now, what makes that really fascinating is Joseph is not in the messianic line. You remember God came and met Abraham in chapter 12, and basically the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is the story of the seed of the promise that will ultimately lead to Jesus, the Messiah. You can see why they're significant. But Joseph wasn't in the messianic line at all. But God used him in a unique way to preserve the messianic line by him keeping his brothers alive long enough for Israel to become a people that would later on become the nation through which the Messiah would be born. So he's a critical person, although not someone who's personally in the messianic line. Now, what you'll notice with Joseph is, this guy's life had more ups and downs than you can imagine. He was a guy who, his highs were really high. His lows were really low. And so watching the story almost makes you dizzy. It's like being on a roller coaster. It's like, whoa, he's doing great. Whoa, he's going down. And it just keeps happening over and over again. So where the story starts in chapter 37, you remember we were talking about Jacob, whose name became Israel. Jacob had, you remember he had the baby derby with his two wives who were sisters and then their two servants. So he has four people competing over who can have the most kids. His favorite wife clearly was Rachel. Now he ends up having 12 kids total. 12 male total. We know about at least one of his daughters. The rest of them, you know, they're just girls. So, but his favorite wife, Rachel, only has two kids, Joseph and then Benjamin. So those were his favorites. So we're introduced to Joseph because it says that he was Jacob's favorite. Jacob was his mom's favorite. He understood this whole thing. His dad was just totally loved by his mom. So Joseph is the favorite, and that'll make you special in some ways. He also did things that ticked off his brothers, like early in chapter 37, it says some of his brothers were messing around, and he went and ratted them out to his dad, which made his dad really proud and made the brothers really resent him. But Joseph was so special that he didn't have to go to work with his brothers, and his dad even gave him a special coat. They didn't have a lot of colors because the dye was very expensive in those days, but he got this, you know, this gorgeous jacket just to remind his brothers, you're not me. So when you're the favored kid, there are certain benefits of it, certainly. And so I would say that his story starts off with him being way up here. It's like 12 kids, I'm the one that doesn't have to work. Dad doesn't even pretend that I'm not his favorite. And I got the outfit and the whole thing. I got the wardrobe. So that's where we start with him. But he also has vision. And as you read through, and I'd encourage you to read chapters 37 through 50 just to get the whole story, not while I'm talking. But he starts having these dreams, which is kind of weird. Like he's hearing from God, it seems like. And he has a couple of dreams that are there in chapter 37. In one of them, he and his brothers each have a big thing of wheat. And he goes, hey, guys, I had a dream. We each had a big thing of wheat, and yours bowed down to mine. I wonder what that could mean. And they're like, oh, you idiot. And it just made them mad. It made them hate him, just like anyone who sees their sibling as a favorite. And his dad thought, well, that's okay. You are the favorite, and so this makes sense. So then he has a second dream, and he goes, hey, I had this dream. There were 11 stars and the sun and the moon all bowing down to me. And now Jacob's like, Joseph, I think you're a little delusional. Do you think your mother and I are going to bow down to you? He's like, hey, I'm the one that told the dream. You're interpreting it. I don't know. So Jacob's like, this kid, maybe I have spoiled him a little too much. But still, he was his favorite. The brothers are resenting him. Later in the chapter, he goes out to find out how the brothers are doing, and they go, this is our chance. Let's kill this little guy. So they end up, they're ready to kill him, but one of the brothers, the oldest brother, Reuben, says, let's not kill him, and then his blood would be on our hands. Let's just throw him in an empty well. Let's toss him in a ditch, and he'll end up dying, and we'll tell Dad, what? He never came out here. So they tossed him in a ditch. Reuben was going to come back and rescue him later. Probably as the oldest son, he thought, if I rescue Joseph, it'll make me at least above all my brothers. So that was Reuben's plan. Dad had been mad at Reuben ever since Reuben slept with one of Dad's wives. That's a whole other story. So he's in the ditch. He's screaming and crying out. Now he's like hit bottom. He was like here, and now, boom, he's in a ditch, and they're going to leave him, and he's going to starve to death, and he doesn't have water, and it's like, what happened to my charmed life? And they took his coat on top of it. So he thinks he's hit bottom. But then the brothers are talking, and Reuben was gone somewhere else, and Judah, who came and said to the brothers, look, let's not kill him. There's some slave traders coming, Ishmaelites. Let's get some money for him. Let's sell him. So now he feels, you know, a rope is thrown down. He's like, okay, good. The joke is over. Hey, brothers. And he's coming up, and there's hope. And he's thinking, I'm rescued. And then they take him over and sell him to Ishmaelites, who are slave traders. And now he's kind of hitting bottom. And at the end of the chapter, at the end of chapter 37, he is now the slave of an Egyptian leader who worked high up with Pharaoh, named Potiphar, and he's sold into his household. So just in chapter 37, he's like, favorite kid, man, stars are bowing down to me. I'm the greatest. I'm feeling so great. I got my fancy coat. He's in a ditch. Wait, I'm coming out of the ditch. Wait, they're tying me up. I'm on my way, and now I'm a slave in Egypt where they hate Jews. They think Jews are unclean, and oh, what could be worse than this? To go from being the favorite son to being a slave in one chapter. So chapter 38 is a whole different story that doesn't involve Joseph as much. It's kind of a break in the action, and you can read that, the story of Tamar and Judah. But in chapter 39, we pick up with him being a slave in Potiphar's house. But check it out, starting with the first verse. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. It goes on and says, he got in charge of everything in the house. He was the leader of the house. Now it's like, wait, I'm a slave. No, you are in charge of the whole house because God was with him and he was successful. What's the key to becoming successful as a slave? You decide, I can't do anything about the fact that I'm a slave, so I am going to be the best slave I can possibly be. And that's one of the ways of having God with you. It's one of the keys of life. We see it throughout the life of Joseph. You can't change the circumstances that you're in. You can't change what happens to you. Sometimes you're just going to be a victim. But if you just sit there and be a victim and feel sorry for yourself, things won't get better. If you look at your life and say, I don't care how I got here, I'm here and I'm going to make the best of it, that's the key to life. How can you make yourself successful where you are? Not to give all the excuses why you can't be successful. So he experienced success. Now it's like, boom, the roller coaster's going back up. He's like, I have a great job. This is awesome. I'm totally respected by my boss. Later in chapter 39, the boss's wife, who's kind of a cougar, is like hitting on him. And it says he's really good looking. And let's face it, he's a young guy. I'm sure Potiphar could get a trophy wife, and she's hitting on him. But the guy has the conviction, if you read the story, for one thing, he probably thought, man, if I get something going with her, she's the only thing I don't control in this house, and I can control her. And so it's tempting, but he tells her, look, your husband trusts me with everything except you. Now, how can I do this to God? He brings God into it. God she didn't believe in, but he did. And so he's resisting her. Well, one day all the other servants were gone, and so she comes and grabs him and goes, come on, let's do it. And she's grabbing him, and he's like, I mean, I can't punch her, my boss's wife, but he is able to wiggle away. She's hanging onto his coat as he runs. Sometimes when you're in temptation, you got to run. Now, that running can take different forms, but the Bible teaches that the lust of the flesh, when your body is trying to get you to do something, the smartest thing you can do is get out of that situation. It doesn't say pray when your flesh is tempted, because if you're alone with somebody you shouldn't be with and romantic music's playing, lights are low, there's nobody else around, and you go, oh, God, please help me not to do this. That's not going to work. It's like putting your head in a lion's mouth and going, please don't bite down. I remember my nephew, Ryan, when he was like 3 years old, my brother took him to Costco to get him pizza. And, you know, at Costco, there's birds walking around all over the place out there by the snack bar. And so Ryan, he goes, Ryan, pray before you eat your pizza. And Ryan's holding his slice of pizza and he's going, dear Jesus, help me to be a good boy and help me not to kick this pigeon. And he goes, right while he's kicking him. A lot of times that's the way we are. The thing is with temptation from the flesh, just like if you're on a diet, you don't go hang out in a donut store. And I don't want to hurt the sale of the donuts out here, but so today might be the exception. If you're ever going to eat a donut, do it for God. But or for kids, it's for the kids. So you can live with that 1 week. But basically, stay away. I'm not hanging out at the donut table because I don't have an intention to eat one. I'll go out there sometimes and buy one for a kid. But that's what he did. He ran. Well, she told, when Potiphar got home, she goes, your favorite guy just tried to attack me. And look, I got his coat as proof. There were no other witnesses. Now, it says Potiphar got really mad. But the thing is, I don't think Potiphar believed his wife. He knew the kind of woman that she was. If he had believed her, he would have killed Joseph right on the spot. But he has to save face because she is his trophy wife after all. So he throws Joseph into prison. Now, here he is. He's like, man, I'm doing the right things. I find myself as a slave. I'm the best slave there is. And I'm promoted. And I feel like, wow, this is awesome. And now here I am. I'm in prison. It's worse than being a slave. And the roller coaster just drops. The bottom dropped out of his hope and his life. And then when you get to, well, in the end of chapter 39, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph, verse 21, and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison didn't look into anything that was under Joseph's authority because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. He was a slave. He was a successful slave. He was a prisoner. He was in charge of all the other prisoners. Because God was faithful to him, and because he always did the best he could do, the cream kept rising to the top. And if you're going to be in prison, you might as well be running the place. And that's what he was doing. His roller coaster, vroom, down, and vroom, it's back up. And now he's doing pretty good. But it gets even better, because in the next chapter, the Pharaoh's butler and baker, who were two of his closest workers, the butler especially was like the right hand to the Pharaoh, they both got tossed into jail. Pharaoh got mad at him. So Joseph is in charge of these two dignitaries. And one day, they both said, man, I had a crazy dream. And so they go, I wish I could know what it means. And Joseph, who had some experience with dreams, said, well, God knows what it means, so what was your dream? And the one guy, the butler, the valet kind of to the Pharaoh, his dream, after he told it, the interpretation was, in 3 days, you're getting out of jail, and you're going to go back, and you're going to be in your old job, and everything's going to be great. And the guy's like, awesome. And then Joseph said to him in verse 14 of chapter 40, but remember me when it's well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this place. So he's making the best of where he is. He's a very successful, you know, prisoner. But now there's hope. A guy who in 3 days is going to be at the right hand of the Pharaoh is now somebody that you helped. And he promises, oh, as soon as I get out there, I'll talk to Pharaoh, trust me. So now the baker is thinking, oh, good, my dream's kind of similar, so what do you got for me? And Joseph's like, sorry, your dream means that in 3 days they're going to have you killed. They're going to cut your head off. Sorry, I didn't make the dreams. I'm just telling you what it means. So now he's in prison, but he's thinking any day now, for at least the first few days, 3 days later, when this guy's there with the Pharaoh, I'm sure he's not going to forget this. But it says down in the last verse of chapter 40, the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. What? Now this has to be bottom. And for 2 years, nothing happens. He's still in prison. He thought, I had my great opportunity, and it didn't work out. So again, it's just, this is the best I'm going to do is just be a good prisoner. I'll do that. But I thought I had my way out. So the story goes on, and in chapter 41, Pharaoh has a couple dreams. And kind of weird dreams, but he tells all his magicians and everybody, all his psychologists, here's my dream, what does this mean? And they listen to them, and one of them, there are these seven healthy cows, and then there's seven sick cows after that, then there's these seven healthy sprouts of grain, and then there's seven really dried up, shriveled pieces of grain. And nobody knew what it meant. And at that point, it rang a bell with the valet, and he goes, you know, Pharaoh, I totally forgot about this guy, but when I was in prison, remember when you had me locked up? Pharaoh's like, I do that all the time. I have no idea what you're talking about. He goes, well, you did. You were mad at me a couple years ago, and I was in prison, and there was a guy in there that interpreted my dream and told me I'd get out of jail, and it happened. Bring that guy. So now there's hope. They call for him. Okay, Joseph, come out. The Pharaoh wants to meet you. He's like, finally, the guy remembered. So he's got hope, and he's coming. And the Pharaoh tells him his dream. And he goes, can you interpret it? And Joseph goes, I don't know. I don't interpret anything, but God knows, and he'll tell you what it means. He goes, here's the deal. You're going to have 7 years of incredible plenty. Crops are going to grow. Everything's going to be awesome for 7 years. But that's the good news. The bad news is there's going to be seven really bad years after that. And so he goes, well, what do we do about it? And he said, well, what you need to do is you need to pick a guy who's like really sharp and smart and wise. Put him in charge. And for 7 years, you tax everybody and you store up grain. And then when you get to the seven bad years, you'll own the world because you'll be the only ones who have grain. And you can sell that grain and you'll get rich. And the Pharaoh goes, man, that's a great idea. So you say I need one guy to be in charge of this whole program. Let's see, who would I have? And Joseph's like, you know, but he's not saying anything, but he's wanting to raise his hand. And then Pharaoh goes, wait a minute. None of my advisors told me this. You did. How about you being the guy? And Joseph's like, yeah, this always happens. It's God's blessing me. And so Joseph goes from languishing in jail to where now he is the second in command, basically, in Egypt. He's in charge of all the economics, all the business, which it's always all about the money. And so he's in charge in Egypt. And that's like awesome. And he's rewarded, you know, heavily for it. Gets to marry a girl whose dad is a pagan priest. And I don't know how that went. We don't know much about her, but had a couple kids and it's going great. Well, after 7 years of this, his family's starving up in the land of Israel. And so Jacob in chapter 42 tells his boys, they have food in Egypt. Go down there, buy us some grain. And so they go down there and he sees them and he recognizes them right away. They start talking to him. He's probably got all the Egyptian makeup on and everything, and he's speaking Egyptian. He's using an interpreter, so they don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And now he's got to be kind of torn. I mean, I thought things were great running Egypt, but now here are these creeps that sent me into the pit and sold me into slavery are here. How do I deal with this?
We'll need to pause right here, but stay with us as Pastor Dave Rolfe returns shortly with Joseph's answer to his dilemma. You're on The Balanced Word. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Now to wrap up our time together, once again, here's Pastor Dave.
He overheard them talking because when they were speaking Hebrew, they thought he couldn't understand. And Reuben starts telling his brothers, I told you, man, I didn't want to have Joseph killed and you guys sold him into slavery. You didn't even listen when he was screaming out of that pit. And Joseph heard that and it reminded him of all the pain from his past and his... He began to break down and cry, so he had to leave and compose himself and came back. And he had asked them about the brothers, and they said, yeah, there were 12 of us all together. One of them is dead, and we have a second brother, Benjamin, who was Joseph's full brother, the only other child of Rachel. He's back at home with our dad, who's really old, and then here we all are. And he goes, I want to know that I can trust you guys and that you're telling me the truth. So you tell me you have another brother, bring him back with you. And they're like, oh man, our dad will never allow that because he's the only other brother that dad really likes. And so Joseph goes, well, if you don't do it, can't help you. So, and he said, leave one of your other brothers here as a deposit. So they took Simeon and they go, hey, why don't you stay here in jail? And we'll go back. Well, they go back, and on the way, they notice in the bags of grain that somebody had put all their money back into the bags. So they're really freaking out. Joseph is like wondering, I wonder if they've changed. I wonder if they'll come back. I wonder if I'll see my brother Benjamin. And so now it's kind of a hard time for him. And it got harder because Simeon's languishing in jail. These guys, their dad was never going to allow Benjamin to go back with them. So he was happy to trade Simeon to keep Benjamin. But then they finally ran out of food. How long would that have taken? It could have been years, but at least maybe a year, conservatively. And they were afraid to go back to Egypt because they got their money back.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's broadcast, but we invite you to join us next time for the dramatic conclusion of the story of Joseph, right here on The Balanced Word. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hands, and